Transition Radio from San Diego, exploring the world of change with you. Are you ready to take your life to a new level? Join transition coaches and best-selling authors Paula Shaw and Kendi Foster as they explore strategies to navigate changes in health, relationships, money, career, and so much more. Get the information and tools to make your life smoother, easier, and more productive. And now, your hosts, Paula Shaw and Kendi Foster.
And welcome to Transition Radio, 4th of July version. Happy freedom, everybody.
Happy fireworks. I'm thinking about all the fireworks that are going off. Actually, right now, as our show is...
That's right. There's fireworks in this room,
oh,
I
man,
think.
Is there ever.
The good kind, the good kind.
This show is a fireworks show.
And that's because Ken and I are here today with Liana Shauli. And she is one amazing lady. She was such a surprise to me. I have to tell this before I do your bio. She's an image therapist. And so I thought she was going to come in here and talk about Loren and
Neiman
Marcus and, you know, all of the brand name great
clothes.
Well,
she did say she wanted to go through my closets. Remember that?
She did. Yeah. I know, but that's a mercy mission. We all know that.
Boy, isn't that the truth?
But Liana is so much more than just somebody who is a stylist and helps celebrities dress, which she does. She does do all that and has worked with some pretty heavy duty people. But this woman is teaching us about creating your image from the inside out. And that's what really struck us as so incredible when she first started talking to us, that we're really looking at who you are inside and how you project that out into the world. And clothes are a part of it, but not even the biggest part. Right, Liana?
No. It's also, you know, I love that you make a distinction between the inside and the outside. What's really interesting is that when we find our voice, when we find who we really are, when all the garbage gets taken away, there isn't even any projection because you just be.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever you go, there you are.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't get that. We're like, no, I have to be this person over here, and then I have to be that person over there, and I have to be
right.
That person over there.
Right.
You know, one of the things that I feel very blessed, Jack Canfield, one time I was in his closet, and we were doing work.
You have a way of creeping in and out of closets.
And he
we're
going to
have some closet stories on this show,
he
I bet.
Something really beautiful. He said, God, Liana, you're like the same that you are at Train the Trainer when you trained on stage as you are here in my closet.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like one of the biggest compliments I've ever gotten.
Mm-hmm.
It's the authenticity and the red thread of the blossoming of who you are that shows up everywhere. You don't become a different person. So
right.
It isn't about, oh, okay, now I have to project. No, it's who are you and how is that showing up?
And since this is a show on the celebration of Freedom Day, I was just going to say that feels very freeing. That
it is.
Feel like you're now able, or you're able to just be yourself.
Yeah.
And you don't have to wait until you're like 70 or 80 when they finally go, okay, I don't care anymore. I'm going to be who I'm going to be, right?
You know, early on, though, I thought I was things like, you know, when I was in high school, I thought I was my car. I thought I was my hair. Then I thought I was my girlfriend. You know, I got out of high school and the college, and I thought I was the college I went to and how smart I was. And, you know, I got married. I thought I was my wife for a while and then my house, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all of that collapsed. And I was stuck with this amazing being that just loves to play and have fun and be joyful and can be serious and can be analytical and everything else. Is that what we're talking about today?
Yeah, it's like the basket of who you are, you know? It's all the pieces of who you are. Mm-hmm. The bad, the good, the ugly, the orgasmic, the fantastic, the fearful. Mm. Sometimes the fearful shows up, and sometimes it's necessary.
There's so many people that teach to cut off the negative, though. Like, don't embrace my negative, crazy side. Mm. Don't be all I want to be. Don't make mistakes. Try to be perfect, right?
I have this way of wanting to be in life, you know, just like children do. And, you know, when my granddaughter was first born, I was sitting on the floor dancing and playing, and my son-in-law walks in and he goes, Liana, you finally found somebody your own age to play with. So yes, you know, if we can be like two-year-olds and they're not, it's not that they let their fear run them. You know, they're inquisitive and they want to find out what life is. And we won't know what life is like until we're in it. Okay? So stepping into the unknown, into this life that we don't know, every day, like I say, dressing is an embodied action. So when we dress, when we get dressed, these are essentially just tools in my work. Okay, so this is closer to you than your breastfeeding child. A G-string is closer to you than your lover. Promise you. I can promise you that. But we don't think about it that
way.
Too
true.
You know, and the relationship we have to the relationship to this thing is so encompassed by fear.
So
and
true.
By what other people are going to say. What are they going to, are they going to love me? Are they not going to love me? Are they going to reject me? That where our true essence, however it is, doesn't ever get to blossom. And I was saying to Joseph earlier, I said, you know, flowers don't invite bees when they're a bud. So I want you to go from bud to blossom. Because when you blossom, especially as women, we get to be the offer.
Yes. And when we blossom, we're putting out a completely different energy. And in a universe of like attracts like, we want to be putting out that big, beautiful energy.
Right. That's right.
Well, today we're celebrating freedom. So freedom of the spirit, freedom of our body, our movement, freedom of our mind. Let's talk a little bit about that. How does somebody achieve that?
Yeah. So imagine you wake up in the morning and your whole life is geared towards what are they going to say?
Yeah.
What are they going to think? What are they going to say? Where can I get that name brand clothing? You know, you are totally enslaved by someone else's impression or vision of you.
Yes.
Right. So that reaction, that's a reaction. That's not a choice. What if I gave you a tool where you could actually look at who you are, your hair, your body, the proportions in your body, the sound of your voice, because if you have a little voice like this, you're a very different person, aren't you? And then you're talking like this, and some people wake up and this is who they are.
Right.
That doesn't mean it's bad. It's just the way it is. But if you had a system by which you could actually get outside of yourself and go, wow, this is my body. This is my masterpiece. This is my eye color. This is my hair color. And you started Liana's AAA plan. You started a plan by which you had A, the first A stands for awareness. Because unless you have awareness of something, there's nothing you can be with.
Right.
You have to have an awareness of it.
And you can't change anything if you don't have an awareness of it.
You can't shift. You can't shift it. I don't know, change, transformation. So you can say, okay, you know what? I'm 5'4". I got a Buddha belly. I got a double D cup. The girls are in the house. This is what I look like. I'm an inverted triangle. So there's technical stuff. And then there's the stuff that's on the inside of my masterpiece. This is who I am. But I cannot shift it until I have the awareness.
Yeah, you know, I was watching a show a few weeks ago on TV, and it was a woman was who was very heavy, came on, and she took off her clothes, you know, down to her bikini, and she was very comfortable in her body. I mean, just so comfortable and vivacious and out there and having fun. And, you know, my first judgment was, oh, you know, she's fat. But then I saw her spirit and just that just melted away.
Yeah.
I think that's what we're talking
about.
That's
what we're talking about. We're talking about the freedom to be in this masterpiece, no matter if you're a size 2 or a size 22. And I always say to my clients, I say that that awareness is the most beautiful, attractive quality. It's the most beautiful accessory. When you have this awareness and you have the second A, acceptance, you can take a mindful action to go, you know what? This is it. If Oprah comes and sits on my couch tomorrow, am I going to meet her with this, yeah, I'm like this meek. No.
No, of course
If she
not.
Was sitting here, you would want to be you. So when you look around the world and you see the people who are charismatic and it's effortless to be with them, there's a sense of freedom that they have about who they are.
And what is the third A?
And the third A is action.
Ah.
So when you have an awareness, the key, the bridge to awareness and action is the acceptance of what's so, exactly the way it is. So I don't have to dye my hair. I don't have to get a boob job. Mm-hmm. But our world is based on the fact that we are never good enough. Who we are. There's so many industries built on our inability to accept ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be a million people out there listening to this and they're going, oh my God, she's destroying the hair color industry. She's destroying the plastic surgeon industry.
Makeup, clothes, but, even the very things
but
she works
on. You know
on.
What? It's good when it's right and when it's true for a certain person, but I think it's gone overboard. Like I see so many women who are not happy with who they are and they think they can tweak it from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't tweak it from the outside. And I think that's the message today.
Not if, in the if, most effective way.
No. If somebody
really
wants to have some freedom, if they want to, if they actually, you know, I think one of the purposes in life is to be happy. How can you be happy if you're always chasing something outside of yourself? Mm. To look better, the next car, the next ring, the next set of clothes, the next relationship. It doesn't matter what it is. It's all temporary.
Yeah.
And you never find that peace
especially
inside of you.
Especially the stuff part is temporary.
Exactly.
Well, it's kind of like we were talking in the past about how most of us wake up and instead of waking up and our first thought being, what can I be grateful for today? Or, wow, I woke up. That's pretty cool right there. That, you know, we wake up and we, oh God, I feel this, or I ache here, or oh, my hair looks horrible, or I look old this morning. You know, we start with
our
that
focus.
Negative focus.
Our focus is on that.
Yeah, yeah. And that's not going to feed anything positive. It's certainly not going to put positive energy out into the world. Mm-hmm. So I think we want to start with what you're talking about. Start with, wow, first of all, whoa, I woke up.
That.
Right? Any day above ground is a good one. So we're glad to be alive. We're glad to be who we are. So we'll talk a little bit more about that in our next segment. Thank you. We'll be right back.
We'll be back with Transition Radio and your hosts, Paula Shaw and Kendi Foster. Would you like to help someone in need to move from poverty to prosperity? Stars of Courage, a 501c3 nonprofit, is looking for established life coaches with experience in education and career mentorship to build confidence and create clear paths to success. Join our team of experienced coaches in a wide variety of fields, equipped with warm hearts with a passion for lifting up those in need. Our Stars of Courage. Find out how you can make a difference at starsofcourage.org. That's starsofcourage.org. We're back with Transition Radio, exploring the world of change. And now, here's your hosts, Paula Shaw and Ken D. Foster.
Welcome back to Transition Radio. This is Ken Foster, along with my guest, Liana Shaoli, and my co-host, Paula Shaw.
Woo! We got it right.
Freedom from pronunciation today, since I've had a hard time saying her name. But we're actually talking about transition and how you can have more freedom in your life and how you can take your life to a completely new level. So, Liana.
Yes.
Let's talk about this.
Yeah, I wanted to share something with you because when I said, you know, we talked earlier, this is really close to my heart. People used to say, so how long have you been doing this? And I would just say my whole life. And I didn't know for a long time why I said my whole life, but it felt very real. It still feels very real. And in 1993, after years of doing my work, I got to speak at an image consultants convention in front of a ton of people. And my mother decided that she was going to come and see me speak. She said, like, you've been doing this. I've never heard you speak. I'm coming. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, God. Because my relationship with my mother was very difficult. I'm the oldest of three. We were Persian Jews born and raised in Germany. And I was a very defiant child. Would you believe it?
Never.
You and me, I'm sure our parents could have had some kind of class together.
Super defiant Gemini. And she says, I'm coming to hear you speak because I've never seen you on a big stage. And then I do that. We have breakout sessions. The breakout sessions happen to be back to back. They were very full. Instead of 80 people, there were about 150 people in the room. at the end of the course, someone gets up, the first person at the mic, and says, I don't have a question, but I have a comment. And I shrink at the front of the room.
Because it's my mom. Oh, no.
And I go, oh, my God, what on earth is she going to say? And she says, I want to share with you that when I was a young woman, I was very ill and I was in bed and very sick. And my daughter would go into the closet and she would pull on the dress and the jackets and everything until the hanger broke, take all the pieces, lay them out on the bed that I was laying in, bring the matching shoes and scarf, the glasses, the purse, pull the covers off my face. And she would say, Mommy, get dressed, because when you get dressed and you feel pretty, then we can go out and have fun together.
Mm.
And she said, I could not follow her invitation because I was so sick, but you can follow her invitation because the same little girl that dressed me is the woman that taught you everything
wow.
she knows today. And I know that she's the best because I was her first client.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's the truth of my life.
Mm.
You know, mm. plus all the other stories. My grandfather was the tailor to the Shah of Iran and the Tsar of Russia. So all of these pieces in my life have come together in mm-hmm. a way that I just look at people on the street and I go, oh my God, I want to go up to them and I want to go, it doesn't have to be like this.
Yeah. You know? You know, as we're talking about story,
oh, that's beautiful.
And we're talking about your work with image, how does story tie into enhancing our image, self-image of
big,
who we are?
Big, yeah. That's a big thing. It's these practices, you know, and I say practices come from stories. Standards of how we live our lives, they come from what we've experienced. And mm. and living life in this body dressing is an experience. So many people say, well, Liana, how do I do that? I don't believe that I'm beautiful. I don't believe that the world deserves me. Mm-hmm. I don't believe any of that. How do I start?
Mm.
I say, get naked. Get naked in front of a mirror. And remember, this is what I want everyone to do. What it takes for a sperm and an egg to come together to create this human being
mm-hmm.
is so magical.
Mm-hmm.
That fact that we're alive, how many trillions of eggs and sperms don't make it?
Yeah. It's
you
huge.
Know?
It's huge.
The fact that we get to do our little pinky finger, the fact that we get to think and have limbic mm. resonance, that our brains are three, you know, we have all this amazing machinery. And then we stand in front of a mirror and instead of adoring it and instead of honoring it, we rip it apart and we take it to pieces and we spit into God's face by not honoring this.
Mm.
So get naked.
That reminds me of a story because there was a time in my life I was going through a really difficult time and I was wondering, why is all this happening to me? But there was a deeper question. The question was, who am I? And I didn't realize it at the time, but I met my a friend, a Jewish friend, and she looked at me and she said, you need to go and stand in front of a mirror naked. And you need to ask yourself, who am I? And she said, you need to stand there and look at yourself and ask that question until you get the answer. And she said, if it takes days, then go back every day. You got to find out who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this mirror exercise is a very simple practice.
Mm.
You know that every time I teach a group of clients, whether it's 1,000 or 10, and I ask in the room, do you have a full-length mirror in your house? Do you know that 80% of humanity does not have a full-length mirror?
Really? Oh, my God. Yeah. That's shocking.
They're on sale at Home Depot for $50.
No, a full-length mirror. You know, the ones
wow.
that are $99
yeah, yeah.
at
sure.
IKEA.
No. Yeah,
and
you have
it's
to.
The first thing that they have to get. They
How do you know if your shoes work with your outfit?
Most people don't have one. Oh, and wow. if they have one, it's not in a place where it really gives them a true reflection of who they are.
Mm.
It's somewhere tucked behind in a closet. There's no light. And if you see yourself, you see yourself not pretty.
Mm.
So this understanding that you want not just people in your life who mirror back to you who
mm-hmm.
you are authentically, but a real mirror, and you look at yourself front, back, side. What does my lover see when my lover's sitting next to me?
Mm-hmm.
What if you don't like what you see?
It's
a good question.
You want to embark on the journey of image therapy. You know, I call our sacred style sanctuary, really a sacred style sanctuary. That's my year-long mentorship. And style, STYLE, stands for seek to transform your life every day. Mm. And if you look at style that way, if you look at it as an inward journey where I get to really accept what this body is, that I get to journey through life in. You know, what if I wasn't like this? What if I was different? But this is who I am. So I can either have the acceptance of it, mm-hmm. or I can be in rejection and suffer.
Mm. But Liana, I can hear listeners saying, and those that can see you.
They're all going.
But she's beautiful, and she has all that hair, and the color works, you know. So, yeah, it's easy for her to accept herself. How do I accept myself?
I got a belly, and if I wanted to, I haven't wanted to because I love food. Yes, intermittent fasting is great. I could easily let go of 30 extra pounds, but the hair. Mm-hmm. So all I have is this moment, Paula. I have this moment with you. Mm-hmm. I can walk out of this building and I can get hit by a car. And then I won't have this moment. So where am I going to be? In this moment with my extra 30 pounds? Mm-hmm. Or am I going to be in some suffering of the future or of the past when I was 16 and I was 98 pounds? That's my choice in every single moment.
Yes.
We all have a choice.
And all the great teachers since the beginning of time have always said, be here now, be present.
And right? That's the hardest part.
I know, because as humans, we don't do that very often. We're either in the past or we're in the future, and we're into regret or we're into anxiety, but we aren't present.
When I say dressing is an embodied action, you know, I invite...
Dressing with clothes, you're talking about.
Dressing.
Yeah, dressing ourselves, mm-hmm. yes.
Dressing with clothes is an embodied action. It's like breastfeeding your child. It's like making love. It's smelling. I say to all my clients, I don't care what you put in your mouth. You want to smell it first. I don't care if it's a pencil or a penis. You've got to smell it. You want to smell what your life is about. You want to inhale life. Mm. But we're not present to that, mm-hmm. you know? So when you start becoming more aware, I invite you every day to feel the insides of your eyelids. Mm-hmm. So when you start feeling your body, you don't live 10 yards away from it.
Right.
You're in it.
That's huge.
And dressing is not about how it looks. When we get dressed in our classes, there's no mirrors. Mm. Mm. Your co-clients, co-students are your mirrors. Mm. Their eyes light up, then it's great.
It works.
Because you first have to feel. Do you know that we shop with our hands? Mm-hmm. We shop like this. Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We shop the way we try to connect with people. But most people aren't aware of that. So feeling your life is a way to be in awareness.
I love that statement. And that's exactly what I was just, my mind was going, feeling your life. That really sums up so much of what you've shared with us. And it's so beautiful, Liana. And as I said earlier, I expected a sort of a Hollywood type to show up here and talk about fancy clothes. And instead, it was a guru. So thank you so much for all you have taught us today and all you've shared.
Liana is giving away she has an offer for our audience today. So I want you to tell us a little bit about that.
I believe that you can be the offer. We can all be the offer by being who we are and showing up authentically. So if you all go to betheoffer.com, www.betheoffer.com.
BETHEOFFER.com.
Thank you for doing that.
Yeah. Okay.
Can you do that again? That
I can. Great. It's B-E, like B, the, T-H-E, offer, O-F-F-E-R.com.
Yeah. And put your name and I think, an email address in so you can be part of our tribe. And you'll get a whole series of emails, videos, trainings. And if you're interested, you know, come and work with me more closely. Come to our events. Come. We have so many things going on. It's magical. So,
and the videos are about?
The videos are about the basic training of image therapy. So when I say you're a masterpiece, your masterpiece has a formula, which I coined your essential formula. Mm. And that essential formula is your body structure, which is the physical architecture of who you are. then there's your coloring. Those are the two pieces that are tangible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, number one and two is hair, skin, and eye color and body. Then there's the sound of your voice, which is a really big part of who you are.
Yes.
Then there's your gaze. Mm-hmm. So the way you gaze at someone has to do with how you dress. I know people think that that's crazy, but find out. The way you walk, how much room you take up, and your essence.
Well, I'm signing up for my kid, for sure.
I love it. Thank you so much. That was amazing. We'll be right back.
We'll be back with Transition Radio and your hosts, Paula Shaw and Candy Foster.
There's a question many of us ask ourselves when we are grieving. When will this pain ever end? Life transition coach and grief recovery specialist Paula Shaw wants you to know there is light at the end of the tunnel. In her new best-selling book, Paula gives you information and practical exercises you can use right away in your recovery process, including breathing methods, the emotional freedom technique, energy psychology work, and many other healing tools. Grief, when will this pain ever end? Available now on Amazon.com.
We're back with Transition Radio, exploring the world of change. And now, here's your hosts, Paula Shaw and Ken D. Foster.
Welcome back to Transition Radio, where Steve Sexton's Sexton Advisory Group is our sponsor, and we're so glad to have him. Today, we are talking to Azeem Kamisa. Azeem is a friend of mine, and Azeem is the chairman and CEO founder of the Tariq Kamisa Foundation. So Azeem is an author. He's an activist, an inspirational speaker. He was born in Kenya, Africa. And earlier in his life, he focused his training in mathematics, economics, and international finance. In fact, he's been an international investment banker pursuing his trade for over 35 years. Azeem came to my attention a few years back when he became a social activist. This was after his 20-year-old son, Tariq, was murdered while driving or delivering pizzas in January 1995 by a young man, 14 years old, is a gang member named Tony Hicks. Azeem tells us that there were victims on both ends of the gun. And we're going to be talking a little bit about that today. And also, it's the 4th of July, so we're going to be talking about the freedom that Azeem attained through this experience.
Well, yeah, the emotional freedom, right? Because most people who would have a child murdered would seek revenge, would probably be very angry, very bitter, and have a very, very difficult time with it. But what's so unusual about you, Azeem, is you chose to forgive. You chose to create a foundation that's all about helping others not to fall into, is the term not teen violence, it's what do you actually call what you're all about helping avoid?
What I'm... talk a lot about is the principles of nonviolence. And obviously, when you're talking about freedom, forgiveness is a good portal for it. I don't think forgiveness is so well understood in the Western culture. Because this is connotation by me forgiving the kid who killed my son. I'm somehow condoning his behavior.
Right.
It's not about him.
No.
And one of the biggest impediments to forgiveness is judgment. He has his journey. I have my journey. And the one thing that I try and get across to people is forgiveness is something you do for yourself. I recognize two things, that if I stayed in anger and resentment, who am I hurting? Myself.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Why have this important, meager real estate of your psyche occupied by somebody who's harmed you? Because that anger and resentment eventually becomes cancer.
That's so
true. It's self-abuse. You might as well take a whip and beat yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing that I think is probably more important is that if you don't forgive, you remain a victim.
Yes.
I did not want to go through life on crutches because I lost my one and only son. I have a beautiful daughter, but he was my only son.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no quality being a victim.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you forgive, you remain a victim. I had a very full life when my son was alive, traveled the world, stayed in nice places, went to good restaurants and a good social life. Then I had no life. It literally took all of my willpower just to climb out of bed. I have a full life today, and I like this life better. I've been given over 1,000 presentations to students teaching the principles of nonviolence worldwide, right? And saving lives of kids. It's been very fulfilling. The investment banking part was about money. This is about saving lives of children. Mm. Much more important, much more fulfilling. So the first thing I talk about is that forgiveness is something that you do for yourself. You have to separate you from the other person. Like in this case, it's Tony. He still gets up in the middle of the night, even though I've forgiven him, work with his grandfather, and he will join us next year. And I constantly am in his life, and we write to each other every month. I go visit him.
So you are saying to us—
But he still has nightmares where he gets up with the sweaty palms. So the point I'm trying to make is that he will have to deal with this for the rest of his life, yes. Even though I have forgiven him.
You've stayed in his life, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and he's going to join us. And I think that we talked about that in the last segment. So the point I'm trying to make is that because of my forgiveness and I created space for him to redeem himself, when he does join us and shares his testimony, He's going to stop a lot of young people not to follow in his former footsteps.
Oh, yes.
Which will help him forgive himself. So there are two aspects to forgiveness. There's one aspect is to forgive people that have harmed you. But really, at some level, we've all harmed people too.
Yeah.
Maybe not killed anybody, But we've harmed. So self-forgiveness is important. So what I find in the work that I've done in the aftermath of my son's death in the last 21 years is many of us are in resentment for what has been done to us, or we are in guilt for the harm we've caused. And if you're living in resentment or guilt, these are highly debilitating emotions, yes, that preclude you from performing at 100% of your potential. Mm-hmm. I think I've done well in social work, although my training was more in business, because I don't harbor any resentment and I don't harbor any guilt. I can be out there 100%. I have a cute story about a lady that has given me permission to share. Her name is Reva. She's a Jewish lady. Because I do workshops on forgiveness where I teach how to forgive people that have harmed you and how to forgive yourself. It's a 2.5-day workshop.
Oh, wonderful.
And she was in my workshop And this morning, on the morning of the second day, she came up to me and says, "Azim, you don't get it." She's very animated. And I said, "Reva, what is it I don't get?" "I am working on forgiving Hitler."
Oh.
Pretty heavy. Mm-hmm. So I said, "Reva," and you could see the lines of hatred and resentment on her face. You could see the anger in her voice. And I told her, I said, "Reva, Hitler died in 44 or 45 at the end of World War II. 70 some years ago. How's it working for you?" You know, I said, "Let me tell you something. The higher power knows how to deal with Hitler better than you do or I do. And trust me, the higher power is dealing with Hitler. Mm. So you don't have to have Hitler live in this important religious psyche. Let it go. So love and joy can live there, knowing that there is no escaping wrongdoing. Leave that to the higher power so you don't have to suffer by sitting in this anger and resentment." And she got it.
Oh,
and she had the biggest breakthrough. And in fact, at the end of the workshop, you could see some of those lines already disappearing on her face. And then a month later, I got a letter from her saying, "Azim, my husband thanks you."
Oh,
because Hitler doesn't live here. We've been married for 35 years, and now we have the most loving relationship.
Oh, how beautiful.
So I think forgiveness is a gift you give to yourself.
And I think
this is so important to understand. And once you get that, and I think that to get to freedom, to get to peace, it's important to look at both. Forgiving people that have harmed you. There's lots of stuff on the website. I mean, I have an audio course on my website that people want. They can go to the workshops.
And your website is what address?
It's azimkhamisa.com. It's my name.
And that's azimkhamisa.com, right?
.com. So, and my books have a lot of chapters on forgiveness. So if you want to follow, to learn how to forgive people that have harmed you and also learn how to forgive yourselves. And I find that if you are able to go through it like I was, And the practical steps, not easy steps, as you pointed out.
Mm-hmm.
Forgiveness is not something that is easy, but it's very worthwhile. So today, I'm at a level of peace that I was never before.
I have a question for you. So, it's my sense that forgiveness brings freedom. Today is Freedom Day. There's a lot of people celebrating. And yet there are people, there are listeners out there that haven't forgiven. They have resentments. They have mm-hmm. anger. They have hatred. They have meanness in their heart, mean-spirited. How quick can a person forgive?
You know, it depends on the gravity of what it is that you are trying to forgive. You know, you could have an argument with your spouse or your other special person, and you can kiss and make up the next morning. Dealing with the loss of a child took me a good 3.5 years. Mm. Not necessarily to forgive, but to get over the grieving period.
Mm-hmm.
We've lost grieving as medicine. Grieving is medicine. There's a great Turkish adage that says, he who conceals his grief does not find a remedy for it.
Oh, that's great.
So I teach a special way of how we grieve. In the Sufi tradition, which is when I grew up in, we have 40 days of grieving. But I just lost my mother a month ago, so I am in that 40-day period when grieving, because mm-hmm. I was told that the soul of the departed person stays in close proximity when you're grieving. In the Jewish tradition, they have sitting Shiva. I believe it's 11 days. When you mm-hmm. people come in, bring you breakfast, lunch, and dinner, mm-hmm. and you're not supposed to cook or clean house, just grieve. And I think that grieving is very, very important. But at 40 days, I was told that the soul of my son, you know, moves to a new consciousness, because the soul is immortal,
right.
And there's a journey after we die. And excessive grieving by family members after the 40 days will impede his journey.
Mm.
I was told that you're better off doing a good deed in the name of the departed, because good deeds are spiritual currency and will provide high-octane fuel for his journey in the next world.
Absolutely.
And I thought to myself, why don't they teach you this stuff in college?
Oh, my mm-hmm. God.
Because when I started the foundation, that was my motivation, that, you know, I didn't want to impede his journey. I wanted to create spiritual currency. And his name is on the marquee of the foundation, the Tariq Kamisa Foundation. We do tons of good deeds every single day mm-hmm. in his name, so that we create millions of dollars of spiritual currency so he can finish his journey in a rocket. That was meaningful to me. Mm-hmm. It also brought energy back into my life. Still gets me up today. And I can tell him, Tariq, we need to go talk to 500 students today, 1,000 students today.
Yeah.
So I think that you have to grieve, but you also have to have a sunset on grieving, and then transmute that grief, its energy, into something positive for you, the person that departed, and society.
I love what you're saying, because energy is certainly my bailiwick. I always look at everything from that perspective. And the fact that you have been able to forgive the way you have is so admirable. And we want to talk a lot more about that in our next segment. So we will be right back with Azim Kamisa.
We'll be back with Transition Radio and your hosts, Paula Shaw and Kendi Foster.
There's a question many of us ask ourselves when we are grieving. When will this pain ever end? Life transition coach and grief recovery specialist Paula Shaw wants you to know there is light at the end of the tunnel. In her new best-selling book, Paula gives you information and practical exercises you can use right away in your recovery process, including breathing methods, the emotional freedom technique, energy psychology work, and many other healing tools. Grief, when will this pain ever end? Available now on Amazon.com.
We're back with Transition Radio, exploring the world of change. And now, here's your hosts, Paula Shaw and Ken D. Foster.
And welcome back to Transition Radio. It's 4th of July, Freedom Day, and we're talking about personal freedom with Azim Kamisa, a man who has an incredible experience with giving himself personal freedom in one of what most of us would think of as one of life's most difficult circumstances. His young son, 19, or was he 20? 20-year-old son was murdered by a gang member as he was delivering pizzas many years ago. And Azeem has been sharing so much wonderful wisdom with us because he was at a crossroads, as so many of us are when adversity strikes in our lives. We can either choose to become bitter and angry and stay focused on that, or we can choose the path he chose, which was forgiveness. And his whole life now is about that path. He created the Tariq Kamisa Foundation, which exists to teach children about nonviolence and to really stand for a position all over the world with teaching that. So it's such an honor to have you here, Azeem, and to be looking at you as a living example of what you teach, because you are not a bitter looking man. There are no lines on your face. You're a delight to be around. And I think most people, if they could see you as well as hear you, would be stymied by who you are, what you stand for, and how you've handled this. So let's talk a little bit more, because you were talking about forgiveness as a path to freedom. Yep. And you've walked that path. You are a master of that belief.
Yes, so thank you for having me, Paula and Ken. I was just thinking about that after 9/11, which we all remember exactly where we were. Mm-hmm. And this obviously happened a lot after Tariq passed away, which was 2001. I went into this very deep introspective space. I am a practicing Muslim, so it's heavy on everybody's heart, 9/11. It's a little heavier on my heart. Mm-hmm. But it's not, because the same faith helped me to get to forgiveness. It's not faith. It's geopolitics. It's oil. It's money. Camouflaged in faith. You know, the Muslim faith is no different than the Jewish or the Christian faith. We all teach compassion and forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And what came out of this introspection after 6 months is my last book, which is From Fulfillment to Peace. The first was Murder to Forgiveness, Forgiveness to Fulfillment, because the work I've done has been very fulfilling, and Fulfillment to Peace. And the basis of that book was I keep an active journal. And after 6 months, what came to me is this quote: sustained goodwill creates friendship. It starts there. And that ought to be obvious. You don't make friends by bombing them. Mm-hmm. You make friends by extending goodwill. Even if you look at your own life, we all have 3 or 4 or 5 friends. You count them on one hand. But it's goodwill, you know, that you've shared over a long term. So sustained goodwill creates friendship, which is evidenced by my relationship with the grandfather, which I've been working with him, of my son's killer, over the last 21 years. So sustained goodwill creates friendship. Sustained friendship creates trust. Sustained trust creates empathy. Sustained empathy creates compassion. Sustained compassion creates peace. So it's my peace formula. Beautiful. Starts with goodwill, friendship, trust, empathy, compassion, peace. But people ask me, how do you extend goodwill to the person who murdered your son?
Yes.
I say you do that through forgiveness. As evident, it worked for me. It worked for my family. What's the miracle? It worked for him and his family. It can work for you and Ken and your families and all of the people that are listening to this. It can work for them. Mm-hmm. So I always tell them, peace is possible. How do I know that? Because I am at peace.
Yes.
But the portal was forgiveness. So it's something that I think important to put in your own toolbox.
And it's not just that you're at peace. You are doing something which I think a lot of people would find unthinkable. You actually work through your foundation with the grandfather of the boy that murdered your son. And that boy, Tony Hicks, you shared in an earlier show, is soon going to be free. He's been in prison a long time. And he's coming to work for your foundation as well, right? To try to help other kids avoid his fate.
Yeah, I mean, I've been working with his grandfather for 21 years. And soon after I started the foundation, I asked the district attorney to introduce me to him. And I went up to him and said, I'm not here screaming revenge or retribution because your grandson killed my son. Rather, I see that that we both lost a son. My son died, and you lost your son to the adult criminal justice system. He was the first 14-year-old to be tried as an adult in the state of California.
Really?
I can't bring my son back from the dead. He's gone. And there's nothing you can do to take your grandson out of prison. It's like a son to him because he lived with his grandfather, and he calls his grandfather daddy.
Mm.
But I've started this foundation. The one thing you and I can do is to make sure no other young person in our community ends up dead like my son, or ends up in prison like your grandson. That we can do. Will you help me? Because he was very quick to take my hand of forgiveness. And Tony was 14. He stayed in his bravado for about 2.5 years. But finally, he gave when they decided to try him as an adult, it took 2.5 years. He took responsibility for the action. He said, I shot and killed Tariq Kamisa, a person I did not know who was not doing anything wrong to me. It took me 5 years to go see him. Wow. He was 19, because very hard to come eyeball to eyeball with a person, right, who took your son's life. I mean, part of you want to wring his neck. I mean, I get that.
Of course.
But when I was with him, it was a very transformative experience. I remember we were together for 1.5 hours. He was the last person to see my son, so there were some holes in the story. And I wanted some alone time with him, which I did. And at one point, we locked eyeballs. I'm looking in his eyes, he's looking in my eyeballs, and we kept that glance for a very long time. I'm looking in his eyeballs trying to find a murderer, and I wasn't. I was able to climb through his eyes and touch the spark in him, touch his humanity, that I got that the spark in him was no different than the spark in me. I wasn't expecting that. In one of my books, there's a chapter called Realize with Real Eyes. Realize with Real Eyes. Sometimes there's way too much judgment in here. But I could tell that he had transformed, because at 19, he didn't portray any of the typical attitude of a 19-year-old. Yeah. He was well-mannered. He was remorseful. He was well-spoken. And I could tell that he would like to turn the clock back. So at that point, I told him, Tony, not only have I forgiven you, when you come out, you have a job at the foundation, you come and join your grandfather and me. And that shifted him. Wow. So he's 36 now. He's 12 units away from his degree in child psychology. Oh. He reads 5 books a month. He's extremely literate, very articulate. And I've been trying to get him out so he can join us, because I know that we've saved him. And he will save tens of thousands of other kids that might would have followed in his former footsteps when he shares his testimony.
Azeem, what was his turnaround? What changed him in that prison system? Because I'm knowing you, and I'm thinking you're praying for him. Yeah. You're sending him lots of love. You're doing some things that are, you know, that are not maybe physical, but right. You know, it's, you're transferring this energy to him.
Yeah, I think the biggest transformation, Ken, was when I met him, because what happened is I went with the grandfather. So we started with the three of us, but I told the grandfather, I need alone time with Tony, because he's going to be defensive. You are there, you as grandfather, and I need to ask him some tough questions. So I think that once he and I were alone, and I had this transformation when I told him, not only do I forgive you, I want you to know you have a job at the foundation. That was very transformative. I did not know that. But the next day, I got a call from the grandfather, who said to me, Azeem, that meeting you with Tony yesterday was very transformative for him. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, it was the same for me, because I clearly remember as I left that prison, I had a bouncier stride than the one I walked in. It was very, a lot of freedom there. Mm-hmm. But he says, as you were leaving, Tony looks at me and says, Daddy, that's a very special man. Mm-hmm. Not only, you know, I killed his one and only son. Not only has he forgiven me, he's offered me a job. I'm not worthy of his forgiveness. I'm not worthy of his job offer, but you know what? I'm going to try. And he has.
That's so beautiful.
He has. He wrote the foreword to my last book. I think he's been punished enough. Mm. I think he needs to be out now and helping society. And I know that he will help a lot of young people because that's what he wants to do. His intonations and his passion is to help other kids.
And if you had taken the path, though, of hate and bitterness and all of that, you would not have created this opening for him to come to what he came to.
Yeah. I mean, I have now helped, you know, I've given like we've talked to 1 million kids, over 100,000 letters. So I've done lots of workshops. A lot of people have transformed. I'm divorced. My mother-in-law came to visit my daughter. I have a beautiful daughter and 3 grandchildren. When my first grandchild was born, she came to visit. And this is my ex-mother-in-law. And I got a call from my daughter saying, Grandma is in town. She's made your favorite meal.
Oh.
I thought, you're kidding me. Because, you know, ex-mother-in-laws don't do that. Dad, I'm not kidding you. Seriously? Yep, seriously. And I would, over dinner, she told me. I thought that was kind of interesting. Over dinner, she told me, I wanted to acknowledge you. Because you forgave my grandson's killer, I too have been able to forgive him.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm
this is like as
crying,
good
crying,
as it
crying,
gets, yeah. isn't it? Oh my God. Azeem, so, what is your web address? How can people reach you if they want to know more or maybe even help the foundation?
Yes, the foundation is tkf.org. TKF, T as in Tom, K as in King, F as in Frank, .org.
Okay.
And that my personal website is my name, azimkhamisa.com, AzimKhamisa.com. There's tons of stuff on YouTube and would love to have people support the foundation. We are definitely very, very active in helping kids not choose lives of gangs and crime and alcohol and drugs. And what really gives me hope in this 21 years that I've been working on this issue of youth violence, that what we teach, the principles of empathy and compassion and forgiveness and peacemaking, that not only are these concepts teachable, our kids are hungry for them.
Oh, and thank you for providing for them what they're hungry for and what the world is hungry for.
And,
bless you.
And I want to encourage our listeners on Facebook and Twitter, we're live right now, to repost this. Mm-hmm. You know, this has been an important message to our communities out there. And I think we started a segment, a show we did with Azeem a couple of weeks ago, where we were talking about the how much violence is in America still today with our youth.
That's
so
huge.
Yeah, this is important. This is important work. Azeem, thank you for being with us today.
You're very
thank
welcome.
You
thank you
so
for
much,
having
Azeem.
Me on your show.
And thank you also to Liana Shauli.
Oh, yeah, Shauli.
Who also you, blessed Liana. Our show today.
Yes.
We'll see you all next week, huh?
Yeah, don't forget to visit our websites at paulashaw.com and kendfoster.com, where you can find out a lot more about us. You can also visit transitionradioshow.com. And soon, free gifts up there. So if this is a podcast and you're listening to it after the fact, go to that site. You're going to find some free stuff for you.
We'll see you all next week on Transition Radio.